This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And only for the month of January, earn up to $550 extra when you sell with The RealReal. That's right, up to $550 extra. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn up to $550 extra this month at TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Listeners, one thing I can't function without in the morning is a steamy, fresh coffee, and I've partnered with Savorista Coffee to bring you their highest exclusive discount. Savorista Coffee offers premium craft decaf and half-calf blends with bold flavors and ethically sourced beans. Use my promo code IPVandMe at Savorista.com to enjoy 25% off your purchase, supporting both the show and your coffee addiction. So use the code IPVandMe at Savorista.com. Everyone, welcome back to IPV and me. So excited I fit in another episode before the year was out. I'm very impressed with myself, honestly. Yeah, so life's been busy. This is my busy time of the year. Work is always super crazy. It's been particularly hectic this year. I don't know what's going on. Everybody's out, everybody's spending money. I gotta tell you though, guys, I've been going through it at my job. I want to talk a little bit about trauma triggers and little things that can kind of set you off randomly throughout the day. You're not expecting it. Thankfully, it does not happen to me a lot anymore. It's actually quite rare. And everything this time around happened at my job, which is why I feel like I had more of a reaction to it than I probably would usually, and it was all kind of in the space of a week or so. So firstly, I had, this was on Black Friday, so it's a particularly hectic and people everywhere, craziness going on, it's a lot happening, it's busy work, and I had this lady come up behind me. I say lady, she ain't no lady, came up behind me. Now, she hadn't tried to get my attention in any way before this, and she, when I tell you, first of all, I think it's so rude when people tap you on the shoulder, but this wasn't tapping, this was like full on banging me on the shoulder. She did it about 5 times to get my attention. Now, I'm in the middle of something, and I'm talking on a radio to some of my coworkers. There's a lot going on and it's like kind of hectic, and there's like a lot of people talking over each other, so it's just a lot going on. Now, when I feel her do that, first of all, anything unexpected, particularly from behind me, I don't think anybody likes that, but if you've been through abuse, that's a particular trigger. And I was infuriated, first of all, and I just decided in the moment, I'm not going to turn around and give you attention. I'm going to finish what I'm doing first, and then I'll turn around to you, because how dare you put your hands on me? By the time I finish what I'm doing and turn around, she's gone. There's another lady that's in the room, and she looks at me as if to say, what the hell, I can't believe she did that to you. And then about half hour or so later, one of my managers comes to me and says that he's had a guest complain about me. Now, he's just as shocked as I am, because when I tell you, nobody has ever made a complaint about me ever in any job I've ever been in. Never has happened. I'm always extremely nice to people, even when they're being rude, etc., even when I'm in a bad mood. And he told me what she said and that I was ignoring her the whole time. I was on my phone the whole time, yada yada. And she had told him that she tapped me on the back. I think she was trying to say is I even tapped her shoulder and she didn't like it. But thankfully he had my back, and he said, you know, she's one of our best people in here and a lot of people don't like being touched. I really respected him for saying that. But then I found out, he didn't tell me because he didn't want to upset me, but she actually came back and took a picture of me with my phone in my hand. Now, this sent me, when I tell you, on an absolute spiral. First of all, how dare you take a picture of me at my job? But I have a very distinctive uniform, and there is only one location in which that uniform exists. And in my head, I'm thinking this picture goes on Google reviews, on Yelp, whatever. My abuser sees it, suddenly he knows where I work. And I was so shaken up all week about it. It really just put me on a spiral. And something else happened the next day where I was speaking to a customer of mine and was just, you know, it was really busy, and I was like chatting and trying to explain something about one of the products to her. Meanwhile, she has a bunch of things to get through anyway, so she's going to be with me for a while. And she literally stops me in the middle of my sentence, dismisses me with her hand, like shakes her hand at me. I was like, no, I don't care. I'm in a rush. I have a cab waiting outside. And when I tell you, it made me feel so small and so belittled. And because of what had happened the day before, I just already was in such a bad place. But that whole thing of like being shushed, being cut off in the middle of my sentence, not being listened to, being belittled, like that's everything that my abuser used to do to me. So now I have two triggers in the space of a day, and I was just so shaken up. Then there was a third thing that happened, again, all in the space of a week, where I'm walking through my job and this woman reaches out from behind me again, grabs my shoulder, yanks me back, and taps me again for a good measure on the shoulder. And it was all to ask where the bathroom was. And when I tell you, if looks could kill, like I glared at her for a second and then I just went and told her where it was. But like I one word answered it, and her husband looked at me, moved back as if to say, oh, like gasped, like they couldn't believe I spoke to them like that. I'm like, I'm sorry, you just assaulted me. Like, are you crazy? I was going through it, guys. And I'm not gonna lie, after the whole thing, especially with the woman that dismissed me like with her hand and shushed me, I'm not gonna lie, I was so upset about it. I went home and cried. I never get upset. Guests have been like, have said crazy shit to me. I've had like, remember one guy called me ugly. I've had been called a bitch. Like I've had crazy shit said to me in various jobs over the years, particularly when I've worked in retail, and like never get upset. It might piss me off and I get angry, but I never get upset. Like this just shook me up like so much. It put me into that place of feeling how I used to feel when I was still with my abuser. And if you're listening to this and you've been through it, you know exactly what I mean. It's like my shoulders were hunched, my body was tense, I felt stressed, my heart was racing. It was just, oh, it was so horrible. Even like, I've repeated it so many times now that I feel like I've kind of got it out of my system. But like, even when I was telling people about it, and I told very few people about it, normally at work, we kind of vent to each other. I didn't even really tell anyone because my voice would get shaky when I was even repeating it, and I would find the kind of feeling in my body like coming back. It was just horrible, honestly. Like, it's so unnecessary. It's just such unnecessary behavior. It's not the only thing that's happened to me in the last few weeks during this busy season, but those were the three kind of like standout points. Anything that's happened since has kind of like upset me a bit, but not, you know, as bad as that. I'm kind of like just getting over it now a few weeks later, thankfully. But it it was really horrible. So yeah, like, you just don't know when the triggers are gonna kind of hit you. I think just being at work too, I was kind of extra vulnerable as well. But it was shit. So yeah, but I'm doing okay now. Everything is good again. I actually, this is my first day of an 8 day in a row off, which I'm very excited about. Christmas, like, yay. I'm not going home for Christmas. I've always have great intentions of going home for Christmas. I always book the week off and then never end up. I usually end up waiting till the last minute, and then the flights are like $3,000, which is insane. So yeah, won't be going home again. Hopefully, as I say every year, next year I'm definitely going home, but we'll see what happens. It doesn't bother me though, honestly. Like, I make such a nice Christmas for myself when I'm here. I've done the thing before where I've gone to friends' houses. Like, I'm never short of invitations, but I never enjoy it as much. I feel like it makes me even more like lonesome about not being at home, whereas when I'm by myself, I'm totally chill and I'm just doing whatever I want. Like, and most of the time, honestly, Christmas Day, the whole entirety of Christmas Day, I feel like I'm on the phone from about 4 a.m. when my nephews call me to show me their toys from Santa. And then I'll get, you know, my mom will call me several times, my sister who's in Australia, and then I call my grandmother, my aunt, and it's like, it just kind of goes on all day. And then with the time differences of where we all are, so I always end up having a great time. I'm meeting my friend tonight. We're gonna have a nice Sunday roast, which I'm very excited about. And yeah, so we're gonna have a nice little cozy drinks, and then I'm gonna go do a little shopping tomorrow. I have it in my head, like, I'm a big reader, and I just have a crazy collection of books. And in my head right now, I really want to buy some like classics. So like, you know, like Emily Bronte and like, you know, those type of like books like that, A Christmas Carol and like things like that. And I have this used bookstore that I go to that I know has a.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Huge collection of them. So I really want to go and do that tomorrow. I don't really have any Christmas shopping to. Thankfully, I do everything online and just send it directly to everyone. I need to get a couple of rugs for my bedroom because I have one little spot where the floor is bare because I redid my room recently. And I might do some thrifting. I'm in the mood for thrift. I'm someone who has to be in the mood to go thrifting, and I feel like it's been in my head for the last week, and I keep seeing TikToks on my timeline. I'm like, I need to go thrifting. But I feel like whenever that happens, like, I'm more of a, like, if I'm spontaneously thrifting, then I find everything. But when I'm planning it, it like never goes right. But we'll see what happens. But yeah, so I have a nice little week planned. I'm gonna watch a bunch of Christmas movies. I've also been going through this phase for the last month or so where I'm trying to get through movies that I haven't seen before that are really like cult classics or just classic films in general. Like, for example, I watched Pride and Prejudice for the first time the other week, the one with Keira Knightley that everybody loves, never seen it before. Watched it, really enjoyed it, totally get the hype. I watched what else did I see? Another Keira Knightley one, actually. I watched Bend Up Like Beckham. Had never seen that movie before. I'd seen little clips of it here and there, when it would be on TV and stuff, but I'd never seen that before. I watched Mamma Mia, I watched The Third Man. So yeah, if you guys have any suggestions for me, let me know, because I'm trying to get through, especially this week when I'm off. So I have like a little list, but I'm trying to get everyone's opinions and ask just like nothing obvious, because people keep giving me like obvious ones that they think are really obscure cult movies, and I'm like, bro, like everybody knows that movie, and I'm a pretty big film buff, I have seen it. But yeah, if you have any suggestions, let me know, I'd love to hear it. Let me know on social media or wherever. Yeah, also the last time I spoke to you, my sister had just, I think, entered Love Island Australia. The show is over now. Obviously it's pre-recorded anyway, so I, you know, I've seen her and all of that. She was here in New York, but the show's finished now. Congrats to Kai and Yana, who won. Absolutely adore Yana and think they were deserving winners. Well, Yana was anyway. Kai not so much, but I still like him a lot. Yeah, it was really interesting to see her on TV. She wasn't really on it a lot. I find the editing on this one, now this is the first time I've watched Love Island Australia, so I'm not sure, but the UK one I've watched pretty much every season apart from the last couple of them, but the editing I find so strange, because they followed the same couple of people throughout, but it was the same storyline over and over and over again, so there wasn't much like in the way of change or anything. And then you don't really, like in the UK one, I feel like even there's always like stars of the show, the standouts, the ones you want to follow, and then there's always the ones that are a little bit boring or a little bit vanilla, whatever. Not everybody has the best personality for TV, but you at least, you know something about all of them. You know something about their background, their family, their jobs, and you follow a little bit of their storyline, at least maybe not as prominently as like the big characters in there. That happens with any reality show, but I feel like in this one, it just like followed the same couple of characters, and then everybody else barely got screen time, so then there was no like context to any of their stories, and then next thing they're just kind of gone. Or like, for example, with my sister, it was like she was coupled up pretty much throughout with this guy called Mateo, and it kind of went from everything was great at the beginning, then we just don't see them for weeks, and then suddenly they're having this really awkward kind of, I mean, breakup, but not really quite a breakup scene, and it just doesn't make any sense. And like, I know my sister inside out, but it didn't even make sense to me watching it. And then it's kind of shown in a way where you think Tamara is the asshole in the situation, and he's, oh, this poor nice little guy, blah blah blah. But then what I hear behind the scenes from it, and hearing from everybody else, and what everybody in there was telling her, and from her point of view, and from how he's behaved since the show has aired, it's a very different story. But like, there's no context to the in-between of it, and they're not the only ones. I'm not just saying that about her because she's my sister, but like there was other people in there too that I'm like, there was one guy in particular, I was like, he came in and then I forgot he was there because we just haven't seen him, and it's like, oh, I want to know what he's like. But yeah, it's just very strange editing. I think it's because it's pre-recorded. I think that has a lot to do with it. I definitely think the pre-recording thing is just not it when it comes to Love Island. They need to do, and nobody seems to enjoy it either, so I'm not sure why they still do it. And it's very like producer heavy. Like, you can tell the producers are making all the decisions in there. It's just very strange. But yeah, but she's honestly, she's doing great. And as much as people have, you know, written some nasty comments about her and everybody in there, you know, she's had a lot of support, so which is really nice to see. Another thing that I've noticed, like I did kind of commentary videos on each episode on TikTok, and it's just how like I watch a lot of reality TV, particularly Housewives and stuff like that, and like, you know, I'll make little comments on Twitter or TikTok, whatever it is, but like, it's for me, I'm watching it and I know I'm watching a storyline, I'm watching characters, even if it is reality TV, you're only seeing edited footage, you're not seeing the full thing, you don't know these people and whatever. And you know, when I'm writing an opinion, I'll say, I didn't like that, I don't like that she did that, not a particular big fan of him, blah blah blah, but I'm not nasty about them because I can understand and have the self-awareness that I don't know this person. I'm just being shown a tiny snippet of them. But then there's people who just like act as if you're the worst person in the world because you said this one thing or did this one thing, and like the nastiness of it. And like, we all know people on social media and trolls and everything are just like say some terrible things, and like, you know, people who've had like death threats because of like stupid shit from complete strangers who don't know the full story. Like, it's kind of wild when you, I think just seeing it when you know the person and you have a little bit of involvement, because I've even had people putting nasty comments about me having an opinion under my video just because I'm her sister and obviously I'm going to support her. But I also will point out when I think she's in the wrong too. Like, I'm not one of those people. But I don't know, I just feel like, you know, it's very easy for everyone to judge a bunch of strangers online, on TV. Like, you're seeing such a small snippet of their lives, and it's almost kind of like funny that people have such strong opinions. But yeah, it's just like, it's just so crazy to me. And like the constant like criticism, negativity, and like insults and just abuse, it just takes it a bit too far, and it kind of takes the fun and enjoyment out of watching it as well. Because I don't know, like, I really enjoyed doing those commentary videos and, you know, seeing other fans and their opinions on it. But then it just kind of takes the enjoyment out of it, because it's like, oh, well, now I don't want to say anything because I'm just going to get some like fucking nasty asshole saying shit about me. But yeah, I don't know, like, people are wild. But I don't know, I think it's like, there's definitely something amiss there. I definitely think there's maybe not a lot going on in their personal lives or something, or there's a lack of like emotional maturity. But yeah, but saying that, like, I mean, Tamara's had amazing support as well. And now that she has her social media back, as of the last few days, like, she's had some really lovely comments and, you know, people making cute little edits of her and like all of that, so it's very sweet. But yeah, it's just something to think about, you know, before you post anything crazy. Like, you really don't know these people at all. Speaking of reality TV, for the last year or so, a major phenomenon in the reality TV world has been Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. I, for one, am absolutely obsessed. I went in, I think, like, everyone kind of not really knowing what to expect, or thinking it was just going to be, I don't know, like a Stepford Wives kind of, I think I had in my head. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, these girls are wild, wild, obsessed, love it. Particularly season 2 was absolutely crazy. Because now we're watching it and, you know, they know the phenomenon that has happened around their show. And it's just fantastic. It is fantastic viewing. I find all of them really interesting individually. They all look so alike, which is crazy. Even now, I kind of get some of them mixed up. But the first season, oh my God, didn't know who was who for so long. And I think in particular, this second season, Macy Neely, who our episode is about today, really stood out to me. She released a book called Told You So, which tells a lot about her abusive relationship. It was very personal, very raw, and definitely worth reading. Most of this episode, I got the information from her book, because, you know, I like to tell the story from the victim's own words and their point of view. But I still highly recommend getting it, because
this podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar Sampler Pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
It really was a great read. And I appreciate and respect how very honest she was. I actually, after the first season came out, it was kind of like right as it came out, and then everyone was still kind of in the middle of watching it. Like, I think it had only been out for a few days. And me and one of my coworkers were both watching it, and she came running up to me one day. She's like, "Oh my God, Amanda, Michaela is here. Michaela is here." And lo and behold, Michaela was in our job. I was so excited to see her. She again is one of my absolute favorites, so it was really cool to see her. She was very, very sweet. Actually, I didn't let her know that I knew who she was, because we don't really do that at our job and we kind of stay professional, but it was really cool to see her. She was awesome. But yeah, so today's episode, as I said, is about the story of Macy Neely. So Macy Neely grew up as a Mormon. On New Year's 2010, she met 18-year-old Cole, who was cute, but she knew was too old for her. She was just 15. Plus, Mormons aren't supposed to date until they're 16. She's heard he drinks and takes drugs, all things Mormons aren't allowed to do. But Macy was a rule breaker. She had never been told the reasons for the rules of Mormonism. Why a girl was considered a slut if she had sex outside of marriage, but the guy would get away with it. Why Mormons can't drink coffee when it's made from beans, while soda is okay even though it's artificial. So what is Mormonism? So Mormonism is the theology and religious tradition of the Latter-day Saint movement of Restorationist Christianity, started by Joseph Smith in Western New York in the 1820s and 1830s. A prominent feature of the Mormon theology is the Book of Mormon, which you guys most likely have heard of. There's a very famous Broadway show called the Book of Mormon, and it is a 19th century text which describes itself as a chronicle of early indigenous peoples of the Americas and their dealings with God. Mormon theology includes mainstream Christian beliefs with modifications. So here are just some of the rules. So there's some health and lifestyle rules, which include abstinence, meaning no alcohol, no tobacco, coffee, tea, or illegal drugs. Dress and grooming standards are emphasized, avoiding immodesty and excessive jewelry. Avoidance of pornography is a strong guideline. So some financial things, you have to pay 10% of your income to the church. Give the money saved from a monthly fast, which is one day in a month, to help the poor. And young men and women serve full-time missions and accept assignments to serve within the church. Some of their worship and commandment rules are to ascend sacraments, attend sacrament meetings and other Sunday services, refraining from unnecessary work on Sundays, daily reading of the Bible, Book of Mormon, Doctrine and Covenants, and Pearl of Great Price. Seek forgiveness for sins before partaking of the sacraments, the sacrament meaning communion, and a strong emphasis on family life and fidelity in marriage, which, you know, I can't disagree with that. Participate in temple ordinances, which involve sacred covenants, receive and wear sacred undergarments day and night after temple endowment. General in conduct, to live a life of moral uprightness, sustain and follow the guidance of the church's prophet and leaders. So some of them are pretty intense, and then some of them I kind of can see, you know, not a bad lifestyle choice. There's a lot of, like, I think, misconceptions about Mormonism too. I watch obviously Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, and I've learned probably most of the stuff there, but I've also watched Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and there's a lot of stuff mentioned about Mormonism there too. They're not quite as strict about it on that show, let me tell you. actually another great show. If you're gonna delve into the Real Housewives world, I would say, I used to always say start with New York, now I say start with Salt Lake City and then go to New York. They're absolutely the best two franchises in the whole thing. So Macy's parents are religious but not devout. She's allowed to play tennis tournaments on Sundays, even though Mormons are supposed to keep the Sabbath holy. Her father believes in rule bending but not breaking. Macy is the youngest in the family and her siblings are already out of the house by the time she's a teen. She refers to her mother as the Mormon Kris Jenner. She knows her family are wealthy, but her father is very frugal. So her parents dislike Cole, who she met at the party, so she hides her relationship from them when he gets out of rehab. She's leaving for college at BYU soon, where her sister Lauren is the tennis coach, and he is leaving for his mission, so she knows it's not going anywhere. So what is a Mormon mission? So a Mormon mission is for the Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, or LDS. It's a period of full-time volunteer service, typically 18 to 24 months, where young adults known as missionaries, elders for men, sisters for women, dedicate themselves to proselytizing, teaching the gospel, and serving communities worldwide, focusing on inviting people to join the church through faith, repentance, and baptism, living a disciplined life, and often serving in pairs and specific geographic assignments. So before he leaves, Cole says he's worried about her and that boys at college will use her. He tells her to be careful and it feels to her like a premonition. While touring BYU, Macy is surprised to see how much the students party. BYU's honor code means you can get kicked out for drinking and having sex outside marriage. Students also have a portal where they can report any bad behavior online. So this is another reason why she's surprised that they would risk partying. But oh my God, can you imagine going to college, which is where you're supposed to do all your crazy shit in your college years, and you have to not only have the strict honor code that you follow but also risk other students reporting you for bad behavior? Crazy. So at the party, a creepy guy keeps trying to dance with her. When getting on an elevator, he manages to squeeze in with just her and his two friends. Macy is frozen when he pushes her against the wall and starts to pull at her dress. But before the doors can close, thankfully, her friend Megan screams at them and manages to pull her back out. She wonders why she froze. She tries to shake it off, but it has rattled her. And you know, little things like this can really shake you up as a woman. Particularly, she is so young here, and obviously there's an innocence to her as well. Obviously, being Mormon, she's been pretty sheltered from things and having to live by the strict code. And then the fact that she freezes, like, how many times, like, have we all been through that situation where you say in your head, like, oh, if that happened to me, I would do this, I would say this, I would do that. But you freeze up and kind of go inside yourself a little bit. So I think we all, as women, definitely know that feeling. So at a Mormon dance on New Year's Eve, Macy meets a guy she refers to as Dick, not his real name. The dance is the church's young single adult dance at a Dave & Buster's, supposed to be for singles aged 18 to 30. Now, that to me is very weird. You're going to have a single, young single adult dance, but between 18 and 30. To me, especially thinking about the fact that you're a Mormon and, like I said, like, quite sheltered and, you know, by all these, like, rules of the church and everything. And, like, you have 18-year-olds mixed in with 30-year-olds. Like, that just, to me, is, like, so strange. So Macy, at this point, is only 17, but she has somehow managed to get in. She says Dick is handsome, tall, and muscly. He's from a good family. She's told he is a bad boy. They kiss, they start hanging out, and he even meets her family. They don't see any red flags with him, and neither does Macy. Nobody ever sees the red flags. Oh my gosh. Which is, again, exactly why I try to get them out here as much as I possibly can. So when he leaves for college, they stay in touch constantly. She doesn't worry about him cheating, but he is anxious about her. So he texts and calls her all the time. These are our red flags. He sends her flowers, and her and her mother think he is Prince Charming. But Dick gets angry at Macy for things that seem normal to her. Also, it is funny throughout that I love that she picks the word Dick to call him as a pseudonym. And, like, there's some points where it just kind of, like, makes me laugh a little bit. So one day Macy's driving with friends when Dick calls and is jealous as he knows that there are guys there. He's rude and she hangs up, embarrassed. Her friends say he's possessive, and while she knows they have a point, she doesn't want to admit it. Dick is insecure and even sad, and she's exhausted from his constant need for validation. He becomes increasingly upset when she's hanging out with her guy friends. One time he says he thinks he can beat her at tennis, so her mother takes him to the court to teach him. When he misses some shots, he gets mad. Macy pretends it's funny in front of her mother, but it is a turnoff for her. And it's just one of those things where, like, they just can't let you be good at anything. Like, he doesn't want her to be confident about anything. And it's like they have this, you know, again, just the narcissist in them is like, I'm the best at everything. Even things that I've never done before, you're a professional at, but I'm still going to be better than you. She visits him in Utah, where he lives off campus, although she doesn't stay with him. She tells herself he'll be less controlling when she leaves for BYU and they live in the same state. Again, we tell ourselves this all the freaking time. He gives her a Tiffany necklace on Valentine's Day and tells her he loves her by writing it in the fog on the car window. She says it back because...
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
She feels she should rather than because she means it. She likes feeling special and chosen, but things are never good for long. He becomes furious when she says she's taking a male friend to her winter formal as he can't make it. They break up and he love bombs her until they get back together, and this becomes their pattern. On one of his trips to California, he's supposed to pick her up so they can go to UCLA to visit her sister McCall. For some reason, she has a sick feeling when he gets there, like she doesn't want to go anywhere near him. Her body is telling her something isn't right, but she doesn't listen and goes with him. Dick tries to get Macy to send him nudes. She doesn't want to, but he begs, and she sends him 2 on Snapchat so he'd stop, hoping he won't be able to save them. But instead, he increases the pressure for more. He also starts pressuring her to go further than kissing. She's told him no repeatedly, but one afternoon while they're kissing, he puts his hand down her pants. She disassociates. She's not even slightly turned on. That night, they go to his parents for dinner. She never likes going there, despite Dick making himself out to be the victim in the family. One time while there, Dick freaked out and started screaming when his brother made the smallest of comments. On the drive there, Dick sounds excited that there won't be anyone home before dinner, but Macy is scared. The second they get there, he leads her to his room where she can tell he wants a handjob from her. Because he touched her earlier, he now expects the same from her. She's afraid of his penis and doesn't want to even look at it. She can't look him in the eye either and just stares at the ceiling. She feels disgusting and guilty. So, on the one hand here, like, she's super young. She's 17. She's very inexperienced. She wants to save herself for marriage. And, you know, I can understand, like, she's terrified of him. She's terrified of his penis. She doesn't know anything about the male anatomy. And then she also feels guilty because of her religion. And she's just, like, really stuck and really torn. And I just, like, really feel for her here. One day, Macy meets with the bishop in his office, a man in his mid-50s, to talk about the sexual act she has partaken in. She cries with humiliation as she tells him that her boyfriend touched her and she touched him. She's only 17. He says he's glad she's crying, that he can see she is remorseful. She feels better as she leaves, but a couple of weeks later, Dick is all over her again, telling her it's okay and normal and it's what good girlfriends in serious relationships do. So, imagine at 17 having to go to a bishop, a man in his 50s, and talk to and tell him about sexual things that she has done. I was so horrified when I read this. I was so horrified. I can't even imagine. And especially the fact that she didn't even want to do these things in the first place. There's something so disgusting to me about having to go to a man to say this. Whatever about like it being a religious thing and, you know, your beliefs in you know, repenting and, you know, telling these people your sins and whatever. If that's something you believe in, that's something you believe in. But there should be an appropriate adult to talk to, like a woman there that she can talk to, like somebody. A 50-year-old man, disgusting. And like, you don't know these men, like, are they getting their kicks from an underage girl, you know, telling them about what they've been up to? Like, oh, it literally just makes me so fucking sick to my stomach. And the fact that even like her parents like know she's going, maybe they don't know that she's speaking to him about this, but even just like letting him her alone in his office, like, it just, there's just something not right about that to me. Like, it really just turned my stomach. And then not to mention the manipulation from her boyfriend, who is saying, no, it's okay, it's normal, this is what you would do if you were a good girlfriend, and if you don't do this, you're a bad girlfriend. And like, oh my god, I hate it. So in Palm Springs for a tennis tournament, Macy receives a text from Dick's friend saying he's in hospital, along with a photo of a hospital bed. Macy is skeptical and searches the image on Google but doesn't find it. It's an hour before her match. She's panicking. She texts for more news but doesn't hear back. She plays terribly and can't focus. Afterward, Dick tells her it was a joke. He was visiting a friend in hospital and wanted to prank her. Her friend's mother thinks it's a terrible thing to do and she should dump him, and she is right. Macy's mother calls him an attention seeker. He sabotaged her and she knows it, so she dumps him again. He sends her flowers, begging to get back together, and she relents a few days later. In May, Dick is home for the summer and he invites her to a week at the lake with his family. She's nervous as she knows he still wants to go further sexually. She stays in the guest room and is relieved to have some private space until Dick's aunt and uncle arrive and she has to go stay in the room with Dick, his brother and his girlfriend. When everyone is asleep, he takes her to the living room where he again asks for a handjob. Reluctantly, she does. When he finishes, she freaks out as she has never seen semen before and wasn't expecting it to go shooting in the air. It smells disgusting and is so messy and she's freaking out, asking what it is. He shushes her so she doesn't wake anyone. And again, like, can you imagine how scary that is if you're that young and you're so inexperienced, you've nobody who's told you what to expect, what happens, and then like suddenly this is happening. Like, what a crazy thing to go through. Like, I just, oh, this poor girl, I just want to give her a hug. So the next night, the same thing happens again, but this time outside on the rocks by the trash cans. How romantic. She again feels guilty and worried that they'll get caught. She also has her first drink on this trip and is again scared, while Dick tells her, in the eyes of the church, doing anything sexual is far worse than consuming alcohol. So now it's like, well, you've already done this thing, which is way worse, you may as well have a drink now too. Like, oh, it's so disgusting. On the last night, Dick's brother proposes to his girlfriend. Everyone is happy apart from Dick, who laughs obnoxiously, because of course he does, because he can't handle somebody else getting attention. That is not him. Why can't he just be happy for his brother? She asks him to stop, but he just looks at her and laughs harder. He starts joking about asking her to the upcoming prom in a similar way, and his family join in mocking it. It makes her feel like a kid. She had wanted to be asked in a nice, genuine way like all her friends had. One night, Macy is excited when her friend invites her to a concert with backstage passes. They're going in a big group, and when Dick hears that there are guys going, he says, "What makes you think you're going to go to that?" He's driving with his eyes off the road and keeps speeding up. Now he's yelling and saying she can't go to anything if there are going to be other men there. They get in a huge fight while he swerves all over the road, and she doesn't end up going to the concert. I've spoken about this before, where a guy who I was friends with and working with never had a relationship, never had any interest. In fact, he had been with my friend previously, nothing at all. And he got so mad one day while he was driving us that he did that same thing where he was speeding up, revving the engine, overtaking cars, when other cars were coming towards us. Like, it was insane and it was so scary. Like, it's just something I hear about quite a bit with guys, and it's again like another intimidation tactic, and like so dangerous because you're putting other people's lives who are on the road also in danger as well. It's just so sick. So on prom night, Dick wants them to have sex. Lo and behold, they're in her parents' house watching a movie with her friends Emily and Sam. She tells him she's saving herself for marriage, like he knows already. He starts to manipulate her, saying prom night is supposed to be a huge night in people's lives, but also like saying that he was absolutely taking the piss out of her about having this elaborate way of asking her to the prom. Like, oh, he starts to manipulate her, saying, oh wait, I saw this already, read this already, I'm sorry. She starts agreeing and kisses him back just to end the fight. He fingers her, but she doesn't want him to. She lets him though, as the fight just isn't worth it. A few days later at the movies, he has his hands down her pants the whole time, and she just wants to watch the movie. His fingernails are digging into her skin and it's making her mad. She keeps trying to take his hand out, but he just keeps putting it back in. She later texts him about how guilty she feels messing around with him. And like, oh my goodness, it's just so disgusting. Disgusting. Her sister McCall reads her texts and tells their father she thinks Dick and Macy are fooling around. Like, I'm sorry, like, what the hell? He understands their teens and their hormones are going crazy, but he tells her she needs to fix the issue. She goes to see the bishop again, but this time he is stern and disappointed in her. Everyone who is attending BYU needs a recommendation from a religious leader, and he threatens to take away her ecclesiastical endorsement away. That's what it's called. Ecclesiastical. Oh, that's really hard to say. To keep it, she will need to see him more frequently and read a book from 1969 called The Miracle of Forgiveness, which puts sexual sin right below murder. Reading it makes her feel like she's the worst person in the world. At the end of the summer, her father tells her she needs to break up with Dick, saying she needs to have new experiences with new people in college and that Dick will only smother and control her. Exactly right. BYU is a culture shock. Everyone is wholesome and almost childlike. She's not allowed to wear a tank top for tennis, and no one can wear spandex in the weight room as it would be distracting to the boys. She doesn't hang out with friends much and spends most of her time with Dick against her father's advice. He lives with hockey players who are constantly drinking and smoking. She gets to a week there before he's pestering her to sleep over. He starts pressuring her to move on to blowjobs. She doesn't enjoy them or the neck and jaw pain. She never likes it when he goes down on her either. She wants to kick him in the head. Pretending to orgasm feels like a chore.
Milo's Pro Rewards members, go big during Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Buy more and save more with up to 20% off job site essentials like primed finger joint boards when you spend $3,000 or more. Plus, get up to 25% off PVC DWV pipes when you spend $250 or more. Shop Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 123. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Dick wants to be with her all the time now. The second she finishes tennis practice, he expects her at his apartment. She wants to hang with her friends and meet new people and see her new niece Presley, who Lauren just gave birth to, but he insists. Then he starts picking her up right after practice so she can't see anyone else, and he says he's doing her a favor. So here again, he's trying to isolate her from everybody. Lauren notices how controlling he is and tells their parents, but she feels like she's in too deep to back out now, knowing how much she's already sinned with him. Who else would want her? He manages to get her to try weed. She becomes anxious about drug testing for tennis. He also expects her to drink every night. Now she enjoys it, but there is still the worry that someone will report her for violating the honor code. Dick gets mad when other guys look at her. Some nights they do have fun, but most of the time he plays the victim and blames her for how depressed and anxious he is. She sees all the red flags, but isn't equipped to deal with them. I feel like this sentence is so important. She sees all the red flags but isn't equipped to deal with them. Doesn't that just say so much to you? She worries that if she tells anyone how uncomfortable he makes her feel, that she will get in trouble for breaking the code. She feels trapped. She's too young and inexperienced to know that she needs to leave him. He starts taking photos of her drinking, and she knows it's to potentially blackmail her and to control her. In October, he moves to a new apartment at his parents' assistance, and Macy comes to think of it as a sex dungeon. He expects them to mess around all the time. He's always angry and picking fights. It could be that she took too long to text back or wanted to hang out with a friend. He starts having stomach pains, paranoia and anxiety, and his anger issues are becoming worse. She never knows the triggers, but drinking alcohol exacerbates it. She'll look at him and not even recognise him. His eyes go black. She knows then to keep her mouth shut and be a good girl. Again, I've spoken countless times about that, them not looking like themselves, the eyes go dark and it's like a different person. Dick cannot access the student athlete building, so it becomes a safe space for Macy. This pisses him off and he gets paranoid she's going there to talk to other guys. When she tells him to relax, he grabs her by the neck, chokes her and throws her on the bed. Again, always the start of it. That neck grab is always the start of it. Another night, he tries to slit his wrists in front of her, and when she reaches for the blade, he slices her thigh. He says it's an accident, but she doesn't believe him. He knows she hates blood. Part of her feels like she's being abused, but she doesn't want to admit to it. It's embarrassing to be a victim. It's better to be in denial and deal with it. She takes pictures of her leg to have proof for herself. When she wakes up the next day, she finds all the photos have been deleted. So he is also checking her phone. They continue to break up and get back together. When she works in a school project with a guy and he flips when he adds her on Facebook, when he follows her around a party all night, when he wants to see her deleted photos, and when he chases her through the apartment with the scissors. What set him off that time was seeing her talking to his brother-in-law, Ben. He left the party in a jealous rage and texts her to say, "Fuck you." When she found him, he called her a whore and said she was flirting with Ben as she does with everybody. He started cutting his wrists with the scissors and chased her with them. She ran back to the party and locked herself in a closet and called Dick's sister. Dick appeared and grabbed her, looking furious but without the scissors in his hand. She screamed at him and Ben ran in to stand up for her. This was the first time anyone defended her and she told him Dick was trying to hurt her. He, of course, denies it and said she was out of her mind. He didn't buy it as he could see how scared she was and so kicked him out. Macy knows that reporting Dick will get her in trouble as she's been drinking. He continually weaponizes the honor code against her. She starts to drink more and one night falls into his already broken door. He screams at her and calls her an idiot and then drives away drunk. He does this a lot to scare her. He goes back eventually and won't let her leave with Sam and his girlfriend. She's disappointed when Sam doesn't protect her and unlocks the car door so Dick can get to her. Once inside the car, he grabs her chest and puts his hands in her pants despite her protest. This is in a car with other people. Later that night, he assaults her in her room. While he doesn't take her virginity, he does things to her that scar her and leave her ashamed to this day. Things she hasn't told her husband or even her therapist about. Things that shouldn't happen to anyone. One time Macy manages to make it a whole month away from him. She even hears he's seeing someone. She's slightly jealous but relieved. She's broken and feels that he has ruined her. She feels like a slut. When he shows up unexpectedly to a party she's at, she cries. None of his old roommates, the hockey guys, want him there. They too are afraid of him. He's a loose cannon. He tells her she's drunk and he's going to take her home and take care of her. The guys intervene and one of them pulls her into a room where he leans in and kisses her. Dick comes in and Macy suddenly feels powerful, knowing these two guys want her. Then another guy comes in and starts to kiss her, and another. She feels like being reckless, but it doesn't go any further. The next day, she's filled with shame and regret and doesn't know who she is anymore. She gets back with Dick a week later. She denies anything happened with the guys as she's scared of what he'll do. He continually tries to get it out of her. He calls her a slut and a whore. He says he's going to report her. He reaches for a knife and walks toward her. He is screaming that she deserves to feel the pain he does. She doesn't really remember what happened next, but when she recalls him storming out the door and slipping on a snowy step outside, his nose bleeds. She takes care of him and he sobs and says he can't believe she did this to him. He leaves and she receives a text from him saying he's suicidal and it's her fault if he dies. Again, countless times we hear the same thing. She drives to his place where she finds him drinking and snorting crushed up pills. As he does so, he looks at her and says, "See what you've made me do." On New Year's at a party, he accuses her of flirting with his uncle and screams at her the whole way home. She's thankful that she'll be doing a lot of travelling soon for tennis. When she practices at campus, he drives by and revs the engine. Before matches, he tells her to hurry up and lose so she can come out with him. During one match, he stands at the edge of the court with his face against the fence. Every time she serves, he tries to speak to her. Her mother tells him off. He's pissed at this. He doesn't want to be told anything. He feels like she is his. All of this starts to bottle up and she becomes more aggressive on the court, even smashing her racket and screaming. Lauren is concerned. One night when she tries to get him not to drive drunk, he pushes her hard into a door where the metal hinge slices her heel. Dick starts hitting himself in the face. She eventually gets him to lie down, but he won't let her leave. She thinks about calling the cops, but she's afraid she'll get a citation as she's been drinking. At 6 a.m, after no sleep, she texts her friend to come and get her, and she leaves as quiet as she can. She doesn't tell her that she thought Dick was going to kill her. Another night at his apartment, he makes some drinks. The next thing she remembers is him naked on top of her while she repeatedly said, "I don't want to." She wants to scream, but her voice wouldn't work. She can't keep her eyes open. The next morning, he said, "I can't believe that happened." He tells her they had sex and gets mad at her when she denies it. Then she recalls flashes of the night before. She feels sick. When they go back to his apartment that night, he again makes her shots to loosen her up. He wants to have sex again to spark her memory. She can't bear to think of it as rape, but she knows it was wrong. She reluctantly has sex with him, but completely disassociates. She knows he has won. He has taken her virginity, all that she had left. She's furious at herself and embarrassed for not listening to her parents. When he finishes, she says she loves him just to try and convince herself that all of this is a little bit less awful and she isn't trapped. Online, Macy sees a meme one day of a girl with her face covered in bruises. The text underneath says she better say she fell down the stairs if she knows what's good for her. She turns to her friend Tara and says, "Isn't this funny?" Tara looks at her and says, "No," but Macy continues to laugh. She tells her she has a dark sense of humour. Dick wants them to have sex all the time. She only feels safe when she's travelling for tennis. Her dad calls one night screaming at her to break up with him, but she knows she can't. She's too worried about retaliation. She hides her relationship from her parents. They start communicating through Messenger as her dad says he has access to her texts. I mean, come on, it's a little much. Her friends throw her a surprise birthday party and Dick insists they leave early. It's clear he just wants to have sex. It's the first time they don't use a condom and she's worried, and Dick gets plan B. He chucks it at her and says, "Happy fucking birthday." Macy is at the student athlete building one day when she meets Eric. He's goofy and fun, a little brother type. Dick has been having severe stomach issues for a while and tells her he's going back to California to figure out his health. He still wants to be together, but Macy says they should break up. She tries to be as nice as possible and make it seem practical so he won't overreact. And suddenly, she has her life back. She starts playing tennis well again, she feels free, she can see friends and wear what she wants. But she thinks she sees him everywhere and flinches when she hears revving engines. When alone at night, she relives the scissors and knife incidents, the night he drugged her and took her virginity. She also worries each day if it is going to be the day he reports her. She knows he has videos of them having sex while she was blackout drunk, videos of her drinking and smoking. She starts to see more of Eric and becomes attracted to him. She meets his family and loves them. They eventually kiss, but she's partying a lot now, and one day wakes up next to Eric and they are both naked, neither of them remembering if they had sex. This time though, she knows he didn't take advantage of her, unlike Dick did. She starts to blackout now every time she drinks. She's pushing away the trauma of her experiences. She feels safe now, but still feels like a slut. But she is so comfortable with Eric. One day he calls her and says his ex-girlfriend thinks she might be pregnant with his baby. She's just relieved not to be the one who is knocked up. They both think it may be a ploy to win him back. The relationship fizzles out when she goes home for the summer, though they keep in touch for a while. She misses him so much and hopes he'll text her. She even thinks about contacting Dick. She feels trauma bonded to him. Eventually she texts and says they should have a no-strings hookup. He says he bets she has a line of guys waiting to fuck her. She's so grateful that it doesn't happen. She eventually reaches out to Eric, who tells her he thought she wouldn't want anything to do with him now he's confirmed his ex is having his child. They become a couple when she gets back to school after he makes a sweet romantic gesture. While she's happy, she's still in a constant battle about her relationship with Dick and the trauma she suffered. Eric gives her his dog tags to have them engraved with a surprise message. It's something the baseball guys do. She settles on the 3 dates, they had their first kiss, started dating, and said, "I love you." They continue to party and have sex, and Macy wakes up each time feeling guilt and shame. Sometimes she cries and opens up to Eric while drunk, and then gets embarrassed when she remembers. She sees it as a weakness. She tells him a little about the abuse she suffered. She tells him she feels like a failure at being a Mormon, as a daughter and as a tennis player. He cries with her as he feels the same about himself. Dick is also back, and she is terrified of running into him. One night he leaves a voicemail which freaks her out. She gets jumpy at the slightest of sounds. Sex starts to become less complicated the longer she's with Eric. She's not as easily triggered, and it becomes an enjoyable experience. She started to get frustrated though, as his baby is due soon. One night she makes him dinner and he never shows up and doesn't text her until the next morning, saying he fell asleep. But her gut tells her something is off. She begins a flirtation with a guy called Liam. Another night Eric is having the baseball team to his house and she's supposed to meet him afterward, but he never texts back. She doesn't hear from him until 5 a.m. when he asks her to come over, but by then she's had Liam at her house, although she does refuse to kiss him. She writes Eric a breakup letter, but later on they meet back up and it's on again. Eric's parents speak to them, saying they know they're having sex and drinking, and while they are not angry, they just worry about both their athletic careers and think they should stop. They try really hard to, but being in love and having already had sex, it is impossible to keep their hands off each other. For Christmas, he asks her for a letter telling him her feelings towards him. This is very hard for her to open up, but when she writes it, she cries, as does he. At this point, his ex has had her baby, but his lawyer advises him not to meet the baby until they have confirmation that it is his. At a family wedding, Macy feels ill and bloated. The following week, while having sex, she finds it feels different. There's blood. She gets cramps and nausea, assumes it's her period, but the next morning the tampon is completely dry. She's confused and wonders if maybe she had a miscarriage. It doesn't even occur to her to go to the ER. She starts to find it hard to play tennis, feeling out of breath, and her stomach continues to bloat. Her sister McCall says she's pregnant, and Macy asks her what her symptoms are and is shocked to hear she has the exact same things happening to her. She flies to Denver for tennis, and Lauren later tells her that this is when she first realized that Macy could be pregnant. That night, Eric is not answering her texts and sounds different when he does. She feels like he must be drinking, which would break their rule of not drinking when they're apart. She knows she has emotionally cheated with Liam, but wonders if Eric has physically cheated on her. He's too mushy when he finally responds. They don't text like that. She finally gets a pregnancy test and gets the confirmation she was dreading. She's pregnant. She prays for the first time in a year. When she tells Eric a week later, he is calm and reminds her they've already spoken about marriage, but she has so much she wants to do first. She has dreams, as does Eric. He tells her everything will work out. She has a scan at 10 weeks and suddenly feels content with motherhood. She feels attached to and protective of this little person growing inside her. Macy's father wants her to break up with Eric. No one knows about the pregnancy yet, but they know they have to do it. She tells Lauren, who says they have to tell their parents. Her father doesn't yell, but she can tell he's pissed and tells her he warned her about Eric. Her mother is furious and calls her a slut. I'm sorry, but that's absolutely crazy from your own mother. Her father is flying to Utah the next day to bring her home and away from Eric. Lauren tells her that she needs to speak to the athletic director and the dean of students. She meets Eric, who tells her his parents were supportive and think they should move in with them and they would help financially. I mean, the contrast here. But she says she needs to go home to her support system. I mean, you want to call it support system? I don't know about that. Eric is upset, but she has to go. When she goes to see Tom, the athletic director, she feels sick, but he is so kind to her. He tells her a baby is never a mistake and that other people there have had kids and come back to BYU to finish playing sports. It is a conversation that has stuck with her to this day. He suggests she withdraw from BYU so she doesn't get in trouble and return after she has the baby. The man in charge of the honor code is also very nice to her, and finally the dean of students, who says he will welcome her back with a hug. So these, you know, random strangers are more supportive to her than her family is. It's like, yeah, okay, you may be disappointed that she's pregnant, but you know, the deed is done now. She's having this baby, so the least you can do is be supportive to your daughter who is scared. As they're packing up to leave, their father warns Lauren not to let her see Eric. They act as though he's abusive to her, but Eric is the one who saved her. Of course she sees him, and it is a tearful goodbye with him, again asking her to stay. Neither of them know that this will be the last time they ever see each other. On the drive to California, Macy opens up and tells her father about the abuse, that she was assaulted and that Dick took her virginity, that he pressured her to drink and smoke. She says that with Eric it's so different and he makes her feel invincible. He responds that she isn't invincible, she's pregnant. He asks her to consider adoption and that they will support her either way. I mean, they'll support her either way, but all they seem to be doing is giving her shit. Like, I'm sorry, I know these are her parents, but like, I just think it's absolutely crazy. But Macy wants him to understand how different Eric is. He says, however, that both Dick and Eric took advantage of her, that she's being naive. When she gets home, her mother calls her naughty daughter. Both her sisters and her partners are also living at home. Her sister McCall is cold with her. Her father says that she's upset as her pregnancy was planned. She did it right. And now Macy is taking her limelight. I'm not sure if it's just a Mormon thing and they're upset that she's like, you know, broken all these rules and whatever. But her family, honestly, to me, seem quite abusive as well. And I'm wondering if maybe like this was something that continually happened in her life. And, you know, a lot of times it can happen where you've come from an abusive situation and that leads to abuse in the future, and you kind of think it's normal. Obviously, there's a difference between how her family are treating her and how Dick treated her, but you know, that can happen. And like, I don't know, I just feel like this girl is so vulnerable, and her mom, her dad, and now her sister also is treating her like she's done the worst thing in the world, which I'm sorry, she hasn't. Like, and also, it's not like she's not even underage. It's not like, you know, she's a 14-year-old getting pregnant. Like, yeah, she's still very young, but I don't know, it just really upsets me to think about it. Like, she didn't seem to have anybody supporting her apart from Eric's parents, who seemed lovely and wanted to take care of her and the child and help her out. But I don't know, it's just really not right to me at all. It's like they just want to control her, and I don't know, it's very sad. I feel like so Macy begins to feel like a burden at home. They won't allow her to contact with Eric, even though he is the baby's father. She thought her and McCall would bond while pregnant together, but instead she is mean and tells her she should have her baby adopted. Oh, don't even get me started. Macy doesn't want the spotlight. She's jealous of McCall's situation. She's building the kind of life that Macy dreams of. Her mother constantly looks at her and sighs, saying she can't believe she did this and that she taught her better. Like, oh, I'm sorry. It's so unfair to me that, you know, McCall gets all this support and Macy doesn't. It's like, yeah, McCall has a partner, but like, you know, he's there to support her. Give that support to Macy, who needs it. She doesn't have anybody. I mean, she has her boyfriend, but they clearly don't want him around. It's just a horrible situation that she's in. So she goes to meet the new bishop and is surprised when he takes the seat next to her instead of across the desk. She can smell his breath, he's so close to her. When she speaks about Dick, he interrupts her and says she isn't taking responsibility for her actions. She tells him she didn't consent to sex, but he says that since she continued to sleep with him, she therefore consented. My God, they should never have men do this stuff. He starts counting out her sins on his fingers. He says she doesn't even seem sad about her sins. He threatens not to write her endorsement to go back to school, as she is taking away a place of a worthy athlete. He says she is to see him every week, and she leaves sobbing. I mean, I don't blame her. That is just disgusting. Her father speaks to Eric's parents on the phone, and they say if Macy wants to have the baby adopted, then they will take the baby instead. Her father says absolutely not. Excuse me. That is their grandchild too, and they should have the option to take that child if they want to give it up for adoption. Like, are you serious right now? Her father starts investigating Eric online to find proof that he isn't a good guy. He says he would bet his entire house that Eric cheated on her. Like, what an awful thing to say to your pregnant daughter. Like, they treat her so horribly. She says throughout that her parents are a great support system to her, And I'm sure they are in their own ways, but honestly, like, I just think they're terrible. The way they treat her, it is so disgusting to me, and it's abusive. And I know that this is Maisie's story to tell, and she doesn't say that about them at any point, but I'm gonna say it because I really believe them to be abusive to her. It's crazy. He even gets Lauren, her sister, in on it, and she asks Maisie's BYU friends. They even text all his exes on Facebook. On a drive to a BYU match, the whole way, her mother and McCall talk about what bad news Eric is. She should be getting excited and shopping for the baby, but instead she's having to deal with this mess. Maisie starts seeing a therapist, which she finds helpful, although her mother keeps trying to drag out of her what they talk about. Again, like, why? Her father one day calls her to his office where he says he has proof that Eric cheated. He shows her a printout of Instagram with a girl she knows who has been around Eric. Maisie says this isn't proof, but she does her own investigating. She thinks about the night that she was in Denver and didn't hear from him. She browses Instagram for comments at the time and finds a girl. She contacts his cousin and asks him about that night. He confirms Eric cheated. She calls the girl and she also confirms. She calls to confront him and he eventually breaks down and confirms it. She tells him that he'll never do better than her, their child will never call him daddy, and he's going to be paying her child support for the rest of his life and to have a good life. She doesn't mean to be cruel, she just wants him to feel the betrayal. She calls his parents and his dad reassures her that she's the only girl he's been in love with and that they can work it out. Eric sends her a photo of them together. He says he loves her and she deserves better. That he'll never forgive himself. He's sorry. The text ends in a letter J. She wonders why he sent it before finishing his thought. Her mother comes and tells her she needs to get out of the house and she's taking her for lunch. She scrolls her Instagram at the restaurant and sees a photo of Eric and his cousin with the caption, "Rest in peace, Eric Mack." She thinks it's a sick joke to get her attention. Then she sees another post of a mutilated truck saying one person dead. She gets a call asking to confirm if Eric is dead. She tries to call him. Maybe it's just a joke, she thinks again. She calls and calls to no answer. Then she calls his father. He confirms that Eric died in a car crash. She blames herself. He was texting her to say sorry. She upset him. She said cruel things. She feels a pain she didn't know was possible. She looks up articles when she gets home and discovers he was thrown through the windshield, dying immediately. She is sick with the thought of him dying alone. She finds out she's having a boy before the funeral so she can tell Eric's parents. She knows now that she will be keeping the baby. Eric's brother gives her the dog tag she had engraved that are scratched up from the crash. Everyone laughs and tells stories about him. It's the first time people have been happy about her pregnancy. She tells Eric to watch over them. Like, imagine that being the first time that people have been happy about the pregnancy. The contrast between the two families, like, their poor child has passed away and they have a piece of him left in the world. He has a baby on the way, albeit his second baby, but I don't know what the relationship is with his ex-partner, if they see that child. But the fact that it's at his funeral, it's just... oh, it's just so sad. It's so, 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 so sad. Every day begins to feel like a chore to Maisie. She thinks about dying. She knows she's depressed. She's afraid she's going to hurt herself or the baby. She fumes whenever she hears her family speak negatively about Eric. I mean, they're still continuing to talk negatively about him after this poor guy has passed away. Like, this is your grandchild's father. And he really didn't do anything bad to Maisie. Like, yeah, he cheated on her, but, like, it's not like he was treating her badly. I don't know. It just really bothers me. McCall sends an application to the Ellen DeGeneres Mother's Day show and is accepted. Even though it's past the deadline, Maisie decides to fill one out too. She needs things for the baby and her parents have made it clear they're not going to buy her everything, even though they have money. Wow. She writes about what happened to her baby's father. She's accepted, but she worries about telling McCall, but it turns out that she's surprised to find out she's okay with it. She comes back from the show with a crib, a year's supply of diapers, gift cards, a stroller, and a baby swing. She also leaves with a feeling like she can do this for the first time. The feeling, however, doesn't last long. Her mother makes her go on her father's business trip with them to Hawaii as she's so worried she will kill herself. I'm sorry, but, like, if you're that worried that your daughter is going to kill herself, why are you so mean to her then? Why are you treating her like a piece of shit that you control? Like, it makes me so fucking angry. Macy feels so sad and alone while there. All of the beautiful sunsets remind her of Eric. I don't know what it is. I feel exactly the same. Sunrises and sunsets, for some reason, when I'm grieving, always make me so sad. Like, there's something about a hopefulness to them that I feel like you kind of, you see it and you're just like, oh, it's another day dawn, or the beginning of another day, and it's like, you kind of feel like, oh, it's another day without that person. Or, and also I think the fact that they're just so beautiful, like when I see a beautiful sunrise or sunset, it makes me feel like, you know, so connected to like the world and nature, and it just makes me feel alive, and just has this like warmth about it. And I think something about that just kind of like, I think it makes you aware of being alive, if that makes sense. And then thinking about, you know, someone belonging to you that's just passed away, it just kind of makes it that little bit more sad. So I can totally imagine how she would feel at this point. At home, the summer is very hot, but her father won't turn on the air conditioning despite her pregnancy. She starts going to the library as it's cooler there. It's about the only place her mother lets her go alone. On a cruise ship in the Dominican Republic, Macy contemplates jumping, but she feels her baby boy kick and knows that she can't do it, at least not now. Her mother follows her everywhere and even makes her sleep in her parents' room. She goes to Utah one day to fill out some BYU paperwork for her, and her mother meets Eric's parents for lunch. His dad is very thin and is clearly struggling. He can barely speak. She starts feeling less sorry for herself as she knows no loss is greater than theirs. She decides she's going to be stronger. A few days later, she's shocked to hear the bishop has told everyone she is pregnant. Her parents had wanted it to be kept quiet. People start texting her mother about it, asking if they need support. Macy asks her if she can now post a photo of her bump on Instagram. She says no, as it will seem like she's bragging and that it'll mess up her return to BYU. Like, what the fuck? Oh my god, I just cannot with her parents. Like, I cannot. When Macy gives birth to her son, he is the most beautiful thing she has ever seen. She names him Hudson Jones. She doesn't name him after Eric or give him his last name, as it would upset her father too much. Yeah, let's not name him after his dead father, who died when he was basically a child himself, because it was upset her dad. Oh my god, I cannot. Eric's family visit her and they thank her for having them there. She tells them how grateful she is for their support during her pregnancy. When she comes home, all of the depression and suicidal thoughts seem to have evaporated. She feels like she was meant to do this. When she goes back to BYU eventually, her Hudson and her mother all move in with Lauren and her family. Lauren and her have become really close, which is really nice to know. Her mother takes care of Hudson while she's in school and playing tennis. Some of the tennis team have started talking behind her back, however. Her friend Tara says that Lauren put her in the top spot because of nepotism. They say she cheated the honor code to get back into school. It breaks Macy's heart. When she asks them to hang out, Tara says, "You're a mom now." She feels the depression seeping back in. Like, now, on top of everything else, her family weren't supporting her. Now her friends are not supporting her. She just had a baby. Her boyfriend has died. It's just like, my heart just like breaks from her. And obviously she's still going through such crazy trauma from being abused for however long that was. And oh my god, I really feel for her. She starts hanging out with a few different guys, but she feels like used goods and has lost all of her confidence. The first anniversary of Eric's death is a real struggle for her. At a match, Tara loses her temper and shouts at a very pregnant Lauren. At the team dinner, someone writes nepotism at the table. Lauren later talks to Tara, who apparently records the conversation and then edits it to make Lauren look bad. Lauren gets an email from someone who overheard Tara making disturbing comments about her, about punching her, and decides to move the team around, pairing Macy with another girl instead. They become close and things start to improve for her. At a match one day, however, Tara starts acting erratically, egging the crowd on and shouting each time she receives a point. Other people then start yelling. Amy's husband yells from the stands, "Yeah, Tara, that's how a real number one player plays." It even feels like her teammates are rooting for her opponent. Lauren's boss tells her that Tara shouldn't be on the team anymore and she gets transferred. Macy never learns why Tara changed on her. She was so close to Eric, and losing her feels like losing another connection to him. Macy's tennis partner, Taylor, meets a guy called Jacob, and Macy gets along well with him and finds him attractive, but would never do anything like that to her friend. Things start looking up for her, and she gets an internship at ABC News in Utah. While talking with a guest there one day, she says how she has a child out of wedlock, when the guest looks at her and says, "You know you don't have to say that, you don't owe anyone an explanation." It builds her confidence. She's starting to appreciate who she is becoming. She goes home for the summer, and Jacob is also home. Taylor is back in Australia and says she's okay with Macy hanging out with Taylor, as she knows she wants to have some friends around for the summer. They start hanging out more, and her parents love him. He meets Hudson, and they really hit it off. Taylor then texts her one day and says that she thinks they would make a cute couple. It's a relief to have her support, as she has been crushing on him but didn't want to ruin their friendship. That is a good friend. One night, her and Jacob kiss. She takes things slow, as she's still not ready, and even avoids him when he starts asking to define their relationship. She eventually realizes how amazing he is and gives him a shot. He tells her soon after that he loves her, and she finds that she loves him too. The first time she said those words since Eric. One day, Macy tears her ACL. Recovery is long and painful. Jacob is close to proposing, but he's also torn between that and going on a mission. It causes Macy a lot of frustration. Hudson has even started calling him Dada. After a tumultuous time, they start opening up to each other more. Jacob feels inadequate that he hasn't been on a mission yet, and feels he doesn't know if he doesn't go, how can he be a respectable man and father? She tells him about Dick. He decides he's going to go back to school for one more year instead of a mission. Eventually he proposes, and Macy is so happy. He feels like a family. She is at peace. But soon after, on a drive, she hears a song that reminds her of Dick, and she notices she has started speeding. She's terrified. It's the first time she's thought about hurting herself since Hudson was born. Lauren encourages her to see a therapist. He is a kind man and is the first person to tell her she was raped. She feels like a weight has been lifted. He believes her story. He teaches her that she needs to stop blaming herself. So from all those people that she told, because she didn't really hide a lot of it after, like she told people after the fact, her friends, her parents, her boyfriends, etc. Not one person pointed out to her that she was actually raped. So I really respect this man, this therapist, for telling her that. Her and Jacob eventually get married. Jacob works a lot and they struggle with money. She starts to think about using her story to help others. She buys a camera and starts a blog. Her father reads it and says he's proud of her and upset about what she went through. He wished he had known about it, but I'm sorry, like, she already told him this. Oh, why is he so surprised now? He says she needs to find a way to monetize her website. Her following grows over the next few months, and she gets hundreds of DMs from women with similar stories. Mostly it's positive feedback, until she gets a message from Dick's sister saying she's so disappointed, sad and enraged by the things that she said. She says what she wrote could send him to jail, that she was also a part of it. She doesn't respond. She's sick of people trying to silence her. She gets invited to her first influencer event. She gets a brand deal. A reality TV producer reaches out. A year after the blog is first published, she gets a message from Dick's ex asking if the abuser she's talking about is him. She says a lot of the same things happened to her. More girls reach out with similar stories about him. Someone says her friend is currently engaged to him, and Macy feels terrified for her. It is so validating when you hear someone has had the same experiences that you have had, even though at this point she knows it was an abusive relationship. You still kind of doubt it, and you still kind of think like, oh, maybe if I did this, maybe if I did that. But hearing it from other people sometimes is that kind of like final nail in the like coffin of getting through the understanding that it's not your fault, you weren't to blame. While Jacob and her are doing great, sometimes she still freezes when they're kissing or having sex. Jacob is always understanding and kind to her about it. She discovers it's better for her when it's not really dark and there is less foreplay. They eventually talk about having a child together. They want to do it through IVF due to a genetic reason she wishes to keep private. In March 2020, she uploads a funny video of Hudson, which goes viral, and she gains 60,000 followers overnight. She keeps posting and the followers keep growing. She makes friends with Michaela through the app. Michaela, my girl, love her. By the end of May, she is pregnant. She starts to make money as an influencer. They have a baby girl called Harlow. She is perfect, but Macy starts having postpartum anxiety. She starts catastrophizing about her and her family being harmed or getting ill. She uploads a video about her life story and it gets over 20 million views, her most ever. She even signs with a manager. She eventually makes Taylor and Miranda and some other moms, meets Taylor, Miranda and some other moms, and they begin to make TikToks together. You'll recognize those names from the show. She's surprised that they drink alcohol. Mom talk gives her more confidence, the infamous mom talk. The girls make her feel hot and fun and bring back the part of herself she lost for so long. A while after that, the swinging scandal breaks. Macy had known something seemed off, but she was never a part of it. And it's so crazy to me because when you watch the show, and it just goes to show everything, like, you know, you never know what's going on in a person's life. But Macy, to me, has always come across as so confident and just really has her shit together. Like, it's hard to believe that she ever kind of went through all of this. So Macy eventually starts a business called Baby Mama, which is a natal vitamin line. She starts going to EDMR therapy to heal her trauma. EDMR therapy, they show a lot on the show. So what it is it stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So it is a structured psychotherapy that helps people heal from trauma and distressing life experiences, particularly post-traumatic stress disorder, by using guided eye movements to help the brain reprocess upsetting memories, reducing their emotional impact and allowing for healthier integration. It works by stimulating the brain's natural healing, allowing it to process stuck traumatic memories so they become less distressing, similar to how they would be processed during REM sleep. I actually find this quite interesting. Like, it seems a bit like new agey and whatever, but like, I actually think it could kind of make sense. Like, I could see how that would work, you know. So Mom Talk is blown up. They're going to be filming a reality show called The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives. The show, as we know, becomes a huge success. Macy has just had a third child. She is so grateful to be where she is and have come so far from all of her trauma. So that was Macy Neely's story. Very, very hard things to read there and listen to. I think she's done amazingly, and again, like I just said, how she appears after everything that she's gone through was really amazing, and I really give credit to her for that. I'm glad that she found a great husband and he takes care of her and they seem really happy, so I'm glad that it all worked out for her. I really hope that her parents are treating her better, because from what she said about them, not too happy with them. But yeah, so I'm glad it's all worked out for her. It was a little bit of a different story than usual, in that she was very young when all this happened. I feel like a lot of times people tend to be a little older from the stories that I've done. But, you know, abuse in teenage relationships happens so, so frequently. There's a page that I follow on Instagram. They're an organization that specifically deal with teenage abuse. If I think of it, I'll add it into the show notes. But I see like the statistics and everything on it. It's just so scary to think about like teenagers being in that situation. That's kind of terrifying to think that someone can be that abusive that young. But yeah, so another interesting story, a lot of interesting points made. Again, we see a lot of the same patterns that we see throughout. And as I say, the more you repeat these things, the more it becomes ingrained in you that, you know, what you went through, and, you know, none of it is your fault. Nothing you could have done could have prevented any of this. It's their problem. It's the abuser's problem. They would have done the same thing in the exact same way to another person. So it's important stuff to think about. And yeah, so that's the end of the episode, last episode of the year. Again, thank you guys so much for listening. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. I've seen the podcast grow probably the most that it's ever grown this year. And I've been trying to do much more things. As you know, I have a merch range now. I'm trying to do a little bit more on TikTok. And yeah, just trying to like get it out there more and try and work on the show more. Again, I wish I had more time. But, you know, a girl's got to work. A girl's got to eat. But thanks so much for listening. Thanks for all the messages. For reaching out to me about appearing on the show. Had my first guest on the last episode. She was absolutely fantastic. and I've had great response from the episodes. So that was really great. Again, if you ever want to appear on the show, or even if you just want to tell me your story so that I can tell the story on the show, you don't necessarily have to be on there yourself. I would absolutely be prepared to do that as well. So hoping to have some more guests in the new year and some more crazy stories for you. Unfortunately, the stories never stop, but as I say, it's important to tell them, and I appreciate every person who comes forward and tells their story, because you are helping people, let me tell you. And yeah, just have a great Christmas, guys. I'm releasing this on Christmas Eve. Currently, it is the evening before. I'm very excited. I'm just having a chill Christmas by myself this year. I'm not going to be in Ireland, which is fine. And I always have a nice little Christmas for myself. And most of the time I'm on the phone all day to my family at home anyway, and my friends and stuff, and just watching Christmas movies. And Stranger Things is released tomorrow, so I'm going to be caught up watching that. But yeah, guys, have a great Christmas. And just remember that if you are alone, you're not alone, because so many of us are in the same situation, have been in the same situation. And again, the hotline.org is always there for you, amongst some other organizations in the show notes as per usual. And I'll talk to you guys next year. Take care, have a lovely Christmas.